And we're going to start in just a moment. We are recording now for the purposes of those who might be listening to this later on. And we will mute everybody, but at the end we'll give you a chance to ask some questions, providing we've got some time left. And it is now our pleasure to turn this over to Elliot Glassenberg at BNA.
Thank you very much, David, for that marvelous introduction. Hi, everyone. I'm Elliot Glassenberg. I'm speaking to you now.
The conference has been muted.
Elliot, can you hear?
The conference has been unmuted.
Go ahead again, Elliot. Sorry.
Okay, great. Anyway, so I'm speaking to you now from Tel Aviv, Israel. It's about 8 o'clock in the evening here. And it is no longer Hanukkah here, but I'm sure it is still Hanukkah there, so happy Hanukkah to everyone.
The conference is now in listen-only mode. The conference is no longer in listen-only mode.
And, do you want me to stop, or should I just keep going?
No, go ahead. We figured it out now.
Okay, great. So I'll explain a little bit who I am, and then I'll just go along with the presentation for those you can see in front of you. We're going to start with the topic today is called Israeli Secular Judaism, A Brief History and Taste. Start with a brief history of secular Judaism in Israel, or I like to call it Israeli Secular Judaism because I think it's something that's relevant not only in Israel, but for Judaism around the world. We'll talk a little bit about the secular Jewish Renaissance in Israel today. There's a lot of exciting things going on in Israel right now. A little bit about what my organization, BNA, does and what some other organizations are doing. And then we'll have time, hopefully, for a little bit of taste, a little bit of BNA-style secular Jewish learning, some text study together. I'll just say before I start that I'm not used to being a very frontal educator, so I'll stop at a few definite points along the way for questions, comments, discussion. But if anyone has questions along the way, feel free to type them into the chat box, and then I'll try to stop and answer them when I can. Okay, so who am I? So, like I said, I'm Elliot Glassenberg. As you can tell from the Israeli accent that I don't have, I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. And I grew up in what I like to call a refo-conservadox family. My parents told me we were Orthodox because we walked to synagogue on Shabbat, even though it was a conservative synagogue. And as I grew older and I actually learned about the different denominations, I realized that my family is a little bit more reform in their mindset. But don't tell my parents I said that. Anyway, so today I identify as a refo conservadox Jew or a chiloni shomer mitzvot in Israel, a mitzvah observant secular Jew in Israel. I went to McGill University in Montreal, Canada, studied psychology and Jewish studies, and then studied Jewish education and Jewish literature at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York. And then I was a Hebrew teacher for 4 years at a Solomon Schechter school in Westchester, New York. It was a lot of lovely middle-aged Israeli women and myself. And then after 4 years, I had what I called my quarter-life crisis. So at the age of 28, I decided to pick up and leave everything and try to do something different with my life. And I decided to come spend a year living in Israel, which is something that I had never done, even though I'd grown up spending almost every summer in Israel with my family. But I decided I want to spend a year of my life actually living in Israel, not just visiting, and a year doing social justice work in Israel. And I found BNA, which has a lot of different service learning programs in Israel. So I came in BNA's Tikkun Olam program, and I did a year of living in Jaffa, studying at the secular yeshiva of BNA in Tel Aviv, volunteering in different nonprofits and schools in Tel Aviv and Jaffa. And I just totally fell in love with Israel, with Tel Aviv, with the whole world of, you know, secular pluralistic Judaism in Israel. And most people who come in these kinds of programs end up going back to their home communities and ideally bringing their newfound ideas with them. I was one of the crazy ones that decided to stick around. And so that was 2 years ago, and since then I've been working for BNA. And I run seminars for visiting Jews from around the world who come to visit Bina. I teach and I work in development and all this sort of different odd jobs that one does in a Israeli nonprofit when one knows Hebrew and English. So that's my story in a nutshell. Today we're going to talk about secular Judaism in Israel. Let's see if I can figure out this button situation. There we go. So if I really was going to do a full, you know, history of secular Judaism, I would probably go all the way back, you know, to the times of the Bible and have a discussion of different forms of Judaism, biblical times, et cetera, and through the Middle Ages and, you know, Spinoza and modernity. But because I'm particularly talking about the Israeli model of secular or cultural Judaism, depending on who you ask, I'll use it a little bit interchangeably throughout the course of the discussion. So I think it's important to start with the beginning of political Zionism, at least. When people think of Zionism, often the first name that comes to mind is Theodor Herzl, who's known as the visionary of the Jewish state, or also known as the father of political Zionism. It's important to note that Theodor Herzl is the father of political Zionism because there was Zionism before and after Theodor Herzl. There was religious Zionism and spiritual Zionism and labor Zionism and all kinds of Zionism, even though that word may or may not have been used. But Herzl was particularly known as the father of political Zionism because he wanted a state of the Jews. And just a statement about Zionism in general. I like to call it a secular cultural revolution. We think a lot about Zionism as a political movement for creating a state, but Zionism wasn't just a political movement. It was a radical, cultural, secular idea for what to do with the quote-unquote Jewish question. You know, around the same time, during the 1800s, Reform Judaism, and many Jews of the Enlightenment, the Haskalah, were deciding, what do we do with this Jewish question? How do we fit into this thing called modernity, into the new modern nation state? Reform Judaism's answer, well, to overgeneralize, was we are going to change Judaism and adapt so that our religion fits into our modern Western liberal value system. Zionism had another approach. Zionisms had different approaches. But for the most part, it was, we need to create a homeland, a center for the Jewish people, where the Jewish people can be a nation, a culture in one place. So Herzl's most famous book, or really more of a booklet, was Der Judenstaat, which is usually translated as the Jewish state, but actually the literal translation is the state of the Jews. Herzl was a very pragmatic political Zionist. He literally believed that we needed to create a Jewish state in order to save Jews, because he felt that Jews would never be accepted in Europe, and they needed a physical refuge to go to. At the same time, after a lot of different criticism of his very pragmatic political approaches by others who we'll talk about, he also incorporated different secularist cultural ideas into his Zionism. So we have a lovely little quote from Herzl on this slide. It is true that we aspire to our ancient land, but what we want in that ancient land is a new blossoming of the Jewish spirit. Zionism wasn't just about retransplanting the Jews from one continent to another, but about recreating and redefining what it means to be Judaism, so not only the Jewish people, but Judaism, Jewish culture and civilization could survive into modernity. I have to warn you, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a little bit of a history buff, so we will get to present day, but I think to understand present day, it's important to understand some of the great shoulders upon which we're standing. Sometimes we like to think that we're the ones who invented the wheel, but in fact, we weren't. So a lot of people talk about Herzl. A name that's not so often heard outside of Israel, at least, is Ahad Ha'am. Ahad Ha'am is known as the father of cultural or spiritual Zionism. Herzl was from, you know, Central or Western Europe, Hungary / Germany. Ahad Ha'am was from Eastern Europe, where Judaism wasn't just, an identity or a label or an ethnicity, but really a whole realm of knowledge and culture. Herzl grew up as a secular Jew in Western Europe, and Ahad Ha'am grew up as a religious Jew in the yeshiva world of Eastern Europe. And the main idea behind Ahad Am Zionism was not political Zionism, it was cultural or spiritual Zionism. Ahad Am said, we don't need a Jewish state. What we need is a homeland, a cultural, spiritual center, so that Judaism can survive into modernity and not just be, you know, a religion based in the shtetl or based in synagogues, but a new modern culture, just like any other. I'm going to read a little bit of what Ahad Am had to say. And now Judaism finds that it can no longer tolerate the galut form, which it had to take on in obedience to its will to live when it was exiled from its own country, and that if it loses that form, its life is in danger. So it seeks to return to its historic center in order to live there a life of natural development, to bring its powers into play in every department of human culture, to develop and perfect those national possessions which it has acquired up to now, and thus to contribute to the common stock of humanity, in the future as in the past, a great national culture, the fruit of the unhampered activity of the people living according to its own spirit. For this purpose, Judaism needs a present, but little. It needs not an independent state, but only the creation in its native land of conditions favorable to its development, a good-sized settlement of Jews working without hindrance in every branch of culture, from agriculture and handicrafts to science and literature. This Jewish settlement, which will be a gradual growth, will become in course of time the center of the nation, wherein its spirit will find pure expression and develop in all its aspects up to the highest degree of perfection of which it is capable. Then from the center, the spirit of Judaism will go forth to the great circumference, to all the communities of the diaspora, and will breathe new life into them and preserve their unity. And when our national culture in Palestine has attained that level, we will be confident that it will produce men in the country who will be able, on a favorable opportunity, to establish a state which will be a Jewish state, not merely a state of Jews. So Ahad Am is saying a lot of things. It's just important to note, this is an article that he wrote just a few months after the first Zionist Congress in Basel in 1897, an article he called The Jewish State and Jewish Problem. And a lot of people look at Ahad Am as kind of a big rival to Herzl. He argued with Herzl on a lot of different things. They agreed on a few things, but, you know, two Jews, three opinions. But Ahad Am Zionism is very important. It's saying we're not going to get all the Jews to pick up and move to Israel. No, a certain number of Jews will get up and create a Jewish cultural home, and not all the Jews of the world are going to come and move there, but it will serve as kind of a center, a hub for Jewish culture and inspiration. And when he says Jewish culture, it doesn't just mean Jewish religion. He means Jewish culture, you know, Judaism, the civilization, to use a Kaplanian term, philosophy and literature and religion and spirituality. And everything. And he would be, we, in order to preserve that and make it work in the modern period, we need to take ourselves, first of all, out of the diaspora, or at least a certain core group out of the diaspora, to create a place where Judaism is the majority culture, and not just trying to survive as a minority, but is the home culture of a nation or a national home. And if you look around at the reality of Israel and the diaspora today, in a lot of ways, Herzl's dream of the state of the Jews came true, but a lot of ways, the reality is a little bit closer to what Ahad Am envisioned, wherein not all the Jews are getting up and moving to Israel, but Israel serves as a spiritual center and home, that shares inspiration to the diaspora, and I would argue the diaspora in return has a lot to share with that Jewish home in Israel. So that's Ahad Am and Zionism, Ahad Am and Herzl, the two big, fathers of Zionism from a little over 100 years ago. And I think, speaking of culture, it's important to talk about some of the, not just the political figures, but some of the cultural figures, in Zionism and in Israel. It's important to note that Herzl only visited Israel once. Ahad Am made aliyah to the city of Tel Aviv. And Chaim Nachman Bialik was another leader of Jewish culture, also from Eastern Europe, also a Jew like Ahad Am, grew up steeped in the yeshiva world, the traditional Jewish life, Jewish values, Jewish culture, Torah, Talmud, the whole shebang, and became a maskil, a quote-unquote enlightened Jew, or you might call today a secular Jew, or someone who chazar b'sheila, a lapsed Jew. But to him, he very much was Jewish in his identity and culture, just not necessarily practicing mitzvot in the traditional sense. So Bialik, Ahad Am, and lots of other great writers, thinkers, philosophers all found themselves in Tel Aviv in the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, before the beginning of the state, and they really established in Tel Aviv what they saw as the first Hebrew city. It's important to note that when Tel Aviv was built in 1909, it wasn't called the first modern Jewish city. It was called the first modern Hebrew city, because the people who built Tel Aviv were mostly secular Muscovite Jews who really believed that, you know, okay, Jerusalem will always be the holy city, but Tel Aviv is going to be like the New York of the Holy Land, a very mixed multitude, pluralistic city that has theater and arts as well as synagogues and all the other aspects of Jewish culture. And it's important to note that Vina, the organization that I work for, is based in Tel Aviv and also just outside of Tel Aviv in Ramat Efal. Now is a very exciting time to be in Tel Aviv, but so were the 1920s and 1930s when Bialik and other these great leaders from Europe were coming and creating this new phenomenon called the secular Kabbalat Shabbat. Let's see if I can figure out how to use some of these highlighting tools over here. Some of you might know Bialik's song, Shabbat HaMalka, which was put to music. He created a sort of secular Kabbalat Shabbat that was about reclaiming and redefining Jewish traditions in a way that were relevant for someone living in Eretz Yisrael, the state of Israel, before the existence of the state in, you know, 1930, whatever. And it's interesting how a lot of his poems, which were written for secular, quote-unquote secular purposes, became incorporated into, for example, many Reform and conservative Sidurim. A lot of the liberal movements of Judaism have incorporated a lot of the fruits of the quote-unquote secular Jewish movement. I keep using the word secular, and I just kind of want to take a moment to stop and clarify what I mean when I say secular. So in Hebrew, the word for secular is chiloni, which comes from the word chol, as opposed to kodesh, right? You have kodesh and chol. You have holy days, like Shabbat and holidays, and you have chol, which are the other 6 days of the week. Originally, back in the times of Bialik, most people who did not practice mitzvot or chose not to practice mitzvot commandments were referred to as chofshim, free people, free thinking, free acting, not bound by any commandments. Over the years, for any number of reasons, the word fell out of use and people started calling them chiloni from the word chol. Now, in America, when people hear secular, we often think of someone who's totally not religious, not connected to their religion or culture. Those of us who are involved in the liberal movements, we know that a lot of people call themselves secular Jews, but maybe Jewish culture is very important to them, or they do like Hanukkah and candles, or do have a Seder, or do fast on Yom Kippur. Similarly, in Israel, a lot of people who will call themselves chiloni, secular, will like Hanukkah and candles, fast on Yom Kippur, might even do Kabbalat Shabbat, might even keep kosher, might believe in God, might not. So the term itself is kind of very vague, and it's defined by whoever uses it. But, you know, so let's try to think of that term broadly. So he wrote a lot of different songs, some songs, you know, Shabbat HaMalka that we know, and he wrote a lot of songs for children, like this one right here, called Nad Ned. I'll read it in Hebrew and then in English, for those who may or may not know. Nad Neda, Nad Ned, Nad Ned, Led Ale, Ale Vared. Male mala, male mata, rak ani, ani, vata. Shneinu shkulim bamuznaim, bein haaretz, lashamayim. Seesaw, seesaw, go down, go up. What is above, what is below? Only me, me and you. The two of us are balanced on a scale between heaven and earth. It sounds like an innocent little children's song. But in actuality, this song and many other children's songs of the time were very heretical and very political. It's a totally atheistic song that's teaching children that there's nothing. It's a very atheistic and humanistic song. There's nothing in the world but you and me, me and you. There's no God or deity above us or below us. Everything is up to you and me. You know, because this is we're right after Hanukkah, I should have maybe put in a few Hanukkah songs. But a lot of the children's Hanukkah songs that we sing in Israel, we don't realize were also written around the same time by these very heretical secular Zionists who try to redefine the holidays, like the song Mi Yemalel Gvurot Yisrael, who can retell the great deeds of Israel, which is a change from the original words from Tehillim, Mi Yemalel Gvurot Adonai, who can retell the great deeds of God. But no, we as the Zionists aren't singing the great deeds of some deity we don't believe in. We're singing the great deeds of humankind, of our own labors. We sing about the miracles and the wonders that the Maccabees did, not about the miracles and the wonders that God did. So this is the vision, not just to create a secular Israel devoid of religion and culture, and not to create a religious society that was just a transplantation of the shtetl, but to recreate what it means to be Jewish in modernity, a Jewish culture, a Jewish nation based on freedom and pluralism. This concept, this idea was continued in the kibbutzim before the beginning of the state, and up until present day, what we have in front of us on the screen are two examples of different kibbutz haggadot. To this day, a lot of different kibbutzim, every year around Pesach, create their own haggadah. Very often you'll notice changing the words to make it relevant. They take the ideas or the forms or the structures that they like from Jewish culture, but change it to make it relevant, more about the environment, more about work, more about labor, and they may or may not take out all references to God. Right now we might think, wow, this sounds a lot like Reform Judaism. Let's take what we like from Judaism, or not just what we like, but what is meaningful and relevant to us, and let's put aside or put less emphasis on the ritual aspects of Judaism that we find less relevant to our lives. Now, of course, this is a process of keeping tradition and change tradition has been a Jewish tradition for thousands of years. But it's just interesting to see the way that Jews in different places and times have changed the traditions to make it relevant to them. And of course, everybody thinks they're inventing the wheel. All right, now let's talk a little bit about the establishment of the state. Up now, I just kind of gave a one-foot history of Zionism before the establishment of the state, and we haven't even talked about Ben-Gurion. It's all great and nice to talk about what the Jewish society, the Jewish state, the Jewish homeland is going to look like in theory. Now when it comes to practice, the man who probably shaped the state of Israel more than anybody else is David Ben-Gurion. And one of the most important things that Ben-Gurion did, in addition to establishing the state of Israel, along with his fellows, was establishing a public school system in Israel, and not just that, a public school system where there isn't separation between religious and state, but where there's, quote-unquote, freedom of religious conscience, where any religious group can educate their children in whichever way they want and have it be funded by the state. So there's, of course, the Arab school system, Christian and Muslim schools, and within the Jewish public school system in Israel, he created two separate streams, the regular mamlechti, public or national schools, and here I'll circle, and then minhal chinuch dati, mamlechti dati, the religious the religious public school system, which in theory sounds really nice, right? That everyone, every community should be able to educate their children the way they want, religious, secular. But it's a little bit problematic. I'm just going to read a statement from the 1937 status quo agreement. In Israel, we talk a lot about the status quo. And we're not just talking about an idea, but we're talking about a written agreement between David Ben-Gurion and the leaders of the religious Zionists from before the state was established, which has really shaped a lot of things, a lot of ways the state runs today, from the public schools to why the Kotel is run by the Orthodox rabbi. And Ben-Gurion promised at the time, the Orthodox leaders, full autonomy will be granted to every education network, and the state will not infringe on the religious philosophy or the religious conscience of any part of the Jewish people. The state will naturally determine the minimum requirement of compulsory studies in Hebrew language, history, science, and so forth, and will supervise this minimum, but will allow full independence to each network to educate according to its outlook and will avoid any injury to the religious conscience. Sounds nice. Although a lot of Israelis who read this today laugh a little bit, noting that in some of the Haredi schools they don't teach math and science. Yet they receive government funding, which is something currently being discussed in Israel today. But I do digress. But what is the result of the separate school system is a growing rift between secular and religious Jews, between religious Jews who raise their children in religious schools, studying Tanakh, Talmud, Jewish philosophy, halakha, in many ways, over the course of the years since the 1930s and 40s, becoming more religiously conservative with a lowercase c, and some would argue even more right-wing politically. At the same time, secular Jews, who maybe their parents or grandparents grew up like Ahad Ha'am, like Bialik, like Ben-Gurion in the religious world and then broke away from it a generation later, two generations later, three generations later, they were no longer these heretical secular Zionist Jews. They were just kind of ignorant Zionist Jews. They didn't really know much about Judaism except how to light candles and eat matzah on Pesach. In the words of Yaakov Chazan, who said already in the 1940s, we wanted to raise a generation of heretics, but instead we raised a generation of ignorant Jews. And one of the greatest problems and questions facing Israeli society today, especially secular Israeli society, is the fact that people are growing up as Israelis in the Jewish state of Israel who don't know what it means to be Jewish. Or they might know a little bit, but if they feel anything, it's either apathy or antagonism towards Judaism, towards an Orthodox rabbi that tries to tell them what to eat and how to get married and how to live their lives. So, you know, at most, you might have some antagonism, maybe some curiosity, but for the most part, there's just a lot of ignorance, and the divide between religious and secular becomes wider and wider throughout the years. Now, of course, I'm overgeneralizing a little bit, so where, you know, the kibbutzim continued their secular Jewish culture, and there are exceptions to the rule, but overall, and surveys have shown, this is pretty much the trend in Israel for several decades, until the 1990s. So the 1990s are a turning point, partly because of the Oslo process. There's a feeling that a lot of things are really changing in Israel, and especially because there was a feeling in Israel until, you know, the peace process began that, well, until we have peace, we really, you know, have bigger problems to deal with than the Jewish character of the state or, you know, any number of issues, women's roles in society that sort of got sidelined from the quote-unquote security question. So it's a time of great optimism, a lot of new interesting initiatives and groups and things happening. And at the same time, it's a time of great tension for those of us who remember it. The divide between right and left, religious and secular, became very, very harsh and very clear. And it almost felt that, you know, you would go to a peace rally and nobody there would be wearing a kippah, and you would go to a right-wing anti-Oslo rally and everybody there would be religious. And there was a feeling that if there wasn't another intifada, there would be a civil war in Israel. And indeed, there wasn't a civil war, but in November 1995, just about 18 years ago, Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. And this is a significant turning point in Israeli history, you know, politically as well as socially and culturally. From a social perspective, a lot of things happened after Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. First of all, many secular Israelis who until then were just kind of apathetic towards Judaism, when a religious Jew assassinated the prime minister and did so in the name of Jewish values, they became antagonistic towards Judaism. If that is Judaism, I want nothing to do with it. At the same time, there were some small groups of secular as well as religious Jews in Israel that did a little bit of cheshbon nefesh, sort of question asking, how did we get to this point? How did we get here? And what can we do to change that? So around that time, a lot of different small groups, a lot of different pluralistic Batei Midrash, pluralistic prayer groups, religious and secular social groups started coming together to see how things could change. Some of the first ones were the Beit Midrash Elul in Jerusalem, which brought secular and religious people together to study Torah, Midrashah Bo'oranim, which emerged out of the kibbutz movement to get scholars and students and educators to just, you know, secular people to just come and talk about Judaism in a way that's relevant for them. And Bina, which was established in 1996, just a few months after the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, also out of the kibbutz movement, particularly not necessarily as a combined religious-secular institution, but as a secular... I see it come from David Berger. You're visiting the Midrash on the convention. Great, you guys are really hitting all the important sites of Jewish pluralism in Israel. It's exciting. So Bina was formed out of the kibbutz movement by scholars and educators that wanted to come together and study Torah, particularly study Torah that would be relevant to their values of social justice values of democracy, values of pluralism, and either find sources that spoke to them, and if they couldn't find a Judaism that spoke to them, to create a Judaism that spoke to their values. You know, and at the same time, it's important to say that in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, conservative and reform Judaism have been growing in Israel. At the same time, they kind of have a different place, and, you know, we all kind of wish there were more conservative, reform, pluralistic Jews in Israel. But it's interesting that a lot of secular Jews tend to connect sometimes better to the quote-unquote grassroots, Sabra, native-born Israeli movements than the reform and conservative, or Masorti, and Yehadut Mitkademet Judaism in Israel, which have over the years, I think, become more and more of a native Israeli phenomenon, less of an import, but still kind of have that tag of being imports. But it's important to note that now we're working together. Today, just under the network of Panim, Panim is called Panim, the Network for Jewish Renaissance, there's over 100 different organizations in Israel. It's going to be called the Field of Hitchatshut Yudit, either translated as Jewish Renewal or Jewish Renaissance in Israel. So many of them started around the same time in mid-1990s, some a little bit before, some a little bit later. It includes Israeli-born organizations like Bina, like Elul that I mentioned. It also includes, another one to mention is Alma. Ruth Calderon, the member of Knesset, is the founder of Alma as well as of Elul. Liberal modern Orthodox organizations trying to change the face of Orthodoxy and Jewish religion in general in Israel, like Ne'emanei Torah v'Avodah, Emi Drashat Aranim we mentioned, as well as the Masorti movement. And the Reform movement, your logo is up here somewhere. Really, you know, all these different organizations kind of popped up somewhat independently. You know, little Minyanim, little Batei Midrash. And over the years, they said, oh, wow, we really are more than just a bunch of little seeds. We're like a whole forest growing together. So we should work together. If you come to the Hakel conference, which happens every Sukkot in Israel, or I'm sure you'll get to meet some of these organizations when you come to Israel, you see that it's really turning from a bunch of different seeds to a forest, a movement that's trying to change the face of society in Israel, the redefining what it means to be a Jewish state, that there isn't one way to be Jewish, there isn't one way to be Israeli. And the more voices, the more faces we have to the Torah, the better it is for Torah and the better it is for Israel. You know, and this manifests in, you know, formal organizations that do Jewish study and prayer and education and culture, as well as in Israeli pop culture. I'm just going to circle up for Shavidan Reichel and Alma Zohar, who are two just Israeli musicians who have gone back to the sources and rewritten or used as inspiration, you know, let's say Shir Shirim or Tehillim in modern Israeli poetry. To show you that Israelis, you know, maybe they were raised as a generation of ignorant Jews, but there's a hunger and a thirst in Israel today among secular Jews to reconnect with Jewish culture, not necessarily in a way that makes them become more religious in a capital R Orthodox mitzvah observant sense, but in a Jewish cultural sense. So I think I'm going to pause here for a little bit. If there are any questions kind of on that brief little history or arguments, disagreements, comments,
Anybody has a question, you can you can type it into the chat box, pass it on to him. Any questions?
Maybe I'll just pause for a minute. People just kind of want to breathe, think, take a minute to type.
Nobody has given us any questions at the moment, but I'll pass it on to you if anybody as any,
okay.
You can get questions at any point while you're talking.
Yeah. All right, so I'll just keep going, but if anyone has questions, you know, I'll stop along the way. All right, so here we have a quote from Dr. Ruth Calderon from just a few months ago when she was sworn into Knesset. Dr. Ruth Calderon is one of the founders of Alma and one of the founders of Bina. Almost on a fluke, or maybe not on a fluke, she became a member of Knesset, and she was one of the first, you know, members of the movement of Jewish Renaissance in Israel to be a member of Knesset, and she's really made it her soapbox in the Knesset from the very first speech that she's going to bring Jewish pluralism into the forefront of the discourse on the top of her priority list. And she said in her speech, if you haven't seen it on YouTube with English subtitles, I highly recommend you see her speech. It's really not that long. And she teaches Torah, and you see some of the Orthodox members of Knesset, you know, having a little Torah debate with her in a friendly way. Anyway, so she said, I long for the day when the state's resources are distributed fairly and equally to every Torah scholar, man or woman, based on the quality of their study, not their communal affiliation. When secular and pluralistic yeshivot, Bate Midrash, and organizations win fair and equal support in comparison to Orthodox and Haredi Bate Midrash. You know, for those of us who know, there isn't separation of religion and state in Israel. There is an official national religion of Israel, and it's Judaism, but not just any Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, i.e. the specifically right-wing Orthodox rabbinate of Israel. So yeshivot and schools are funded, but any non-Orthodox yeshiva school, be it secular, pluralistic reform, conservative reconstruction, whatever, does not get government funding. Actually, this week the Supreme Court is hearing the case of reform and conservative rabbis who want to be funded by, have their powers, salaries paid by the state, just like Orthodox rabbis are. I do have to note at this point that, you know, within the world of Jewish pluralism in Israel, some people are in favor of separation of religion and state, saying no rabbi should get their salary paid by the state. At the same time, others say, you know, it's good that there isn't total separation of religion and state like the U.S., like that the state does support religious institutions, but if they're going to, they should support them equally. So, I mean, I'll just say my own personal opinion is I'm in favor of separation of religion and state in Israel, not necessarily separation of culture and state, but separation of religion and state. But as long as the state is going to fund religious institutions, they should fund them equally. On top, we have a picture of Ruth Calderon, and on the bottom, we have a picture of Women of the Wall. And the lovely lady in the middle is Rabbi Mira Regev, who is an Israeli-born, Reform-ordained rabbi and a teacher at Bina. So we have a lot of successes and a lot of things that are very hopeful. There's lots of new organizations popping up all the time in Israel. Now is a very exciting time to be in Israel and Tel Aviv to see what's going on in the world of Jewish Renaissance, a lot of different creative ideas and institutions and forms of Judaism and culture. At the same time, we're still struggling with a political situation of inequality for non-Orthodox Jewish denominations or non-denominational Jews who just want to engage with Jewish culture in their own way and not be told how to live their lives. Just a little bit about Bina and the things that we do. We're kind of an interesting organization because we're in the realm, we're in the world of Jewish pluralistic culture, along with organizations like Elul and Alma, the Reform and Masorti movement, like I mentioned, but we also are in the world, we're in the business of social action. Because we came out of the kibbutz movement, we believe that you can't just talk about Judaism and social justice, you have to put into practice. So after starting a Beit Midrash, very quickly we created a secular yeshiva in South Tel Aviv. Those of you who come in July are going to be able to come see and visit it and know that South Tel Aviv is not the most pretty neighborhood of Tel Aviv. It's not the place you necessarily would want to build a yeshiva, but it's a place that needs a lot of social justice and social action. And it says in the Jewish tradition that whenever you study Torah, you should always study Torah in a room with windows, that your Torah is never disconnected from the challenges and the realities around you. So you should study in a room with windows. So we study in a room with windows, and all of our students in our various programs also engage in social action in the community. So we have our original Beit Midrash in Ram Tefal with different courses dealing with Judaism and social justice. We have our secular yeshiva, which is in South Tel Aviv, and now with a new branch in Jerusalem, mostly for young people ages 18 to 30 who spend about half their time volunteering in the neighborhood and about half their time studying Torah. We have Tikkun Olam, which is a program that we do in partnership with the URJ and the Daniel Center for Reform Judaism, which is an ASAP program for 20 to 30-year-olds who want to come spend a year in Israel studying and volunteering. And we have community empowerment programs, a program called Bina in the Neighborhood, where we go into the neighborhood and see what their communal needs are, provide volunteers, organize them, and a lot of the organization is done around Jewish values. We'll create these learning leaders group who come together to study Torah and give back to the community. And community empowerment education programs, either in public schools or even in the IDF. One of our most recent programs is a bat mitzvah program, somewhat similar but somewhat different to the program the Reform Movement has. For, you know, it's very common in secular public schools in Israel for the boys to study with a rabbi and have a very meaningful experience in an official ceremony, and the girls will have nothing or the girls will have a party. But we wanted to create an opportunity for girls, first of all, to have a bat mitzvah, but also to have a meaningful experience engaging with girls' issues, feminism, body image.
Thank you. Please stand by.